Chapter 6. Since it was decided that all of us would go to the masquerade, Daisy and I agreed that the two of us would go into town and pick out everyone's costumes. I packed up the wagon, hitched the horses, and sat in the driver's seat as Daisy got ready to leave. I brought the cart around the gravel drive and waited just below the stairs for her. I turned in my seat, looked out over the rolling hills, and breathed in the crisp air. It was a beautiful day, and it was clear that fall was fast approaching. The leaves rustling in the light breeze were just starting to brown, the long grass rustling up the hill looked less green, and the air brushing at my hair felt cooler. I never minded the change of season before. It was just something that happened each year. But now, I had something to look forward to. None of my women had experienced fall or winter, and had never seen snow before. Maybe they had from their memories of the past, but they'd never witnessed it for themselves. One of my favorite things about Monster Women was that everything in my world, everything that I thought was mundane or boring, was new and exciting to them. I got to show them new things each and every day. I saw their eyes light up with wonder and their mouths drop open with awe. It gave me something to be excited about every morning, and I looked forward to teaching them new and exciting things.
Are you ready to go?
A familiar voice asked from above. I raised my head, took in Daisy's gorgeous appearance, and nodded once. Sometimes I felt overwhelmed by their beauty. I always wanted to ask myself how I got so lucky. But it was all thanks to science. None of them, not Valerie, Daisy, or Ryan, would exist if it weren't for science, my machine, and a little bit of my accidental genius. I even had to thank the Duchess for a little bit of it. If it weren't for Edney and her need for super soldiers, none of my monster women would exist in the first place. Yes, I breathed, swallowed hard, and then drank her in as she swept down the stairs toward the wagon. The bear girl wore a thigh-length dress, something that I would never see an aristocrat wearing. The fabric of the skirt was a red plaid and cinched at her waist with bright gold buttons. Her arms were covered in the same red fabric, while her chest was covered in a lacy white fabric. Her large breasts peeked out of the top of the dress, and a beautiful gold necklace rested on their pillowy tops. Her light brown hair was pinned back at the sides, almost like Josephine's was this morning, and small white flowers peeked out of the sections. And it was all topped off with the most charming matching bonnet to hide her ears.
Valerie told me exactly what she wanted. While Ryan only gave me a vague description, only that she wants something emerald green and black, which should be pretty easy to find.
I bet that'll contrast well with her skin tone, I nodded. What does Valerie want? The bear girl climbed up beside me, settled herself into the driver's seat, and rested her gloved hands in her lap. I took the reins into my hands, slapped the leather straps against the horses' backs, and pulled away from the house. The sun was hot on our backs, but the breeze that brushed up the hill was cool on our faces. Soon, the skies would cloud over, and heavy fall rains would come, but I didn't mind.
Something baby pink, or bright pink, or white, like a wedding dress. She found an old book in your library, and it had illustrations of a wedding in it. I think she wants to look like a bride or something like that.
But don't all of you? I asked. I know that Ryan has made it clear that she wants me as a mate.
Have I not made it clear enough? I want to be nothing more than your wife and to carry your children eventually. I believe that I've told you that on multiple occasions.
You have, I breathed. I'm still floored that those are words that have been spoken to me in my lifetime.
What do you mean? You never imagined someone telling you that they loved you, wanted to marry you, and have children?
I know it's hard to understand, but in this society, women don't do that. They never have, and they never will. I never imagined it because I never thought it was possible until I created Valerie.
Well, it's all very real. All three of us love you and want all of those things, even though Ryan may be the one who voices it the most often. I'm sure that when we create more monster girls, they'll want the very same thing, too, and they will tell you every day.
Sometimes I forget that outside of our home, it's different, that women don't feel the same way that all of you do. so it's a bit of a shock going out in public and seeing how men are treated.
It's abominable. Every time we go somewhere, I want to scream at the aristocrats. They treat their servants, consorts, and workers so terribly, and all the men are doing is trying to survive. I want to create a new world where everyone is equal. No one is over the other, and men are allowed to live as they please.
I'm not so sure if that's possible right now. It's been this way for hundreds of years.
Well, it changed once. At some tipping point, women received powers, and men were placed lower than them. If it changed once, it could change again. But not only that. If it took so long for women to develop powers, don't you think at some point, if they keep breeding with men, that the males will receive powers too?
I don't think anyone has thought about that. But it could be possible. No one knows how the powers developed over time. It just happened. But I'm sure it somehow passed through our DNA.
DNA? What's that?
It's a new scientific idea I read about in journals. Friedrich Miescher said, the doctor that discovered it, DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid. It's the genetic code that determines all the characteristics of a living thing, I informed her. Everything in this world contains DNA, from the plants around us to the animals. Think of it as the blueprint that makes us us. When a child is born, it shares the DNA from both parents, 50% from the father and 50% from the mother.
So, do you think it's solely passed through the mothers? Or do you think at some point it could be passed down to the sons, too?
It's possible. I've never looked into it for myself, but I believe that the reason that women have developed powers could be because of a genetic mutation. It is entirely possible if a woman's genetic material mutated, a man's could do the very same, especially since women are continuing to breed with specific families. Or the gene could be recessive in men. They could be the carriers, and they're the ones who pass it on to the females. I have no idea, as I said, I've never looked into it, but I bet if I collected enough blood samples from males and females, I'd be able to figure it out.
Well, maybe we should do that. Though I doubt we'd be able to get the aristocrats to agree to it.
I mean, if we posed it in a certain way, maybe said it was a DNA test to prove that women are superior in every way, then they'd be lining up at the door to give me blood samples.
I wouldn't doubt it. You can have mine, Valerie's, and Ryan's. But I'm not sure it'll make a difference since we're created in a machine.
I'm sure that it would work, I assured her. You came from three women with strong powers, and I don't think it'll make a difference that half of your DNA came from a beast.
Then we should test it. Like you said, pose it so that the aristocrats think it's about them, and then study the samples. You could do the same thing with the men. I'm sure that all of the wealthy women would cart out their consorts to have their blood tested, too.
Do you think it'd be believable? I asked. Do you think that the aristocrats would believe it?
If they were all as smart and cunning as the Duchess, no. But seeing how they all act around each other, they're not as intelligent as Edeny, so yes, I believe that they would. They're so full of themselves, so concerned with their money and social standing. There is no way that they would see through our ruse. And then, once we've finished with the blood, we write up a bogus report saying all the things that they already believed.
That could work. The aristocrats may be powerful, but their true downfall will be their vanity. They care for no one around them except for themselves. That's why I think I like Miss Josephine so much. She's the only aristocrat I've ever encountered that gave a damn about those around her, especially her workers. That's what surprised me the most. I remember going to Delphine's Mercantile, and she treated her employees so horribly. But Josephine is so different. She treats them with respect as they should be, and you can tell from the way that they act around her. They love her and want to continue to work for her.
I think that Miss Josephine will be a useful ally in the future. Think about it. She has a power that you or I do not. She's been in Edenhart for all of her life. She knows these women and knows how to speak to them. I may have Delphine's memories, but I'm not someone they can trust. They don't know me or anything about me. But Josephine, she was raised here. She knows everyone. But more importantly, She knows how to move through the social circles with grace and the air of someone who's lived this life.
You're right, I agreed. I know that Valerie and Ryan desperately want to add her to the sisterhood, but Josephine is better at all of these societal things than any of us. If we were to have her on our side, it would be better to have her as the face of our operation.
Not only that, if we transformed her and added her to our family, she would lose all of that social standing. Once she went into the machine, her life and appearance would be changed forever. No one would know her, as they've done with me. We simply cannot lie again and say she's another aristocrat from another city. There's no way that it would be believable. All of us know how Edeni is. If we lied again about another aristocrat moving to the city and being interested in you, she would be immediately suspicious. I swear that woman is like a hound dog when it comes to anything related to Charles Rayburn. I honestly want to know why she's so obsessed with you. Well, besides the fact that you are so intelligent and handsome.
I have no idea. It wasn't like this before, especially when I was under her patronage. She only came to the manor when she wanted to check on the experiments or intimidate me into working harder or faster. Daisy shifted in the seat as the wagon rolled from hard-packed dirt onto the brick pavers of the streets. The gorgeous brunette lifted her head, adjusted her bonnet, and then glanced around the streets. Every time we entered town, it was almost as if an entirely different persona took over her. She always sat up a little straighter, her expression took on a displeased grimace, and the softness in her golden eyes hardened. The bear girl carefully took the reins from my hands, held them in her own, but kept her eyes glued to the side streets. A few aristocrats noticed us, nodded in our direction, but none of them called out to Miss Browning directly. After the drama with the Duchess, it was clear that no one wanted any part of Daisy Browning after that, and I was totally fine with it, as long as we were left alone.
Where are we going, Charles? I haven't fully memorized the layout of the city, and I still need you to show me where to go.
There's a few tailors in the city, I told her, but only one that sells dresses and costumes for things such as masquerades. It's pretty close to the town square. I'll guide you from here. Take a right on that street ahead of us. Do you see it?
Yes, Charles. But you should guide me with your hands from now on so it doesn't look as if we're talking. We don't want anyone to suspect anything.
Yes, mistress. Anything you wish, mistress.
You know I didn't mean it like that. I only want our relationship to look believable to those around us.
For the rest of the way to the tailor's shop, I guided the brunette with hand signals, and she followed them perfectly. Before long, we pulled off to the side, tied off our horses, and I was the first to hop from the driver's seat. Daisy stood and offered me her gloved hands, but I pushed them out of the way, grabbed her by the trim waist, and lifted her down. A few aristocrats giggled from behind us, but none of them dared to speak a word in front of Miss Browning. Daisy may have been new in town, but she'd effectively taken on the Duchess, the most powerful woman in Edenheart. And not only that, but she'd won back the manor Edeni had tried to sell off. So, to the other aristocrats, the petite brunette was something like a legend, and I wasn't sure if they respected her or if they feared her.
This way, Charles. I don't have all day.
The bear girl strode ahead of me, curled a finger over her shoulder, and gestured me forward. Like before, I walked a little bit behind her, not shoulder to shoulder as we would back home, and I felt the eyes of the other aristocrats as they burned into my back. The tailor's was pretty close to the place where we'd met Josephine for the very first time, and I guided Daisy under my breath. The shop was at the end of the street, right before it opened up to the town square where even more stores and restaurants were located. I hurried after Daisy, glanced down the road where the large central fountain flowed in the middle of the square, and then paused for a second. The Duchess moved freely through the massive courtyard. A lace umbrella held over her shoulder, and shrouded her angular face in shadow. But that wasn't what caught my attention. A man I'd never seen before trailed after her in a white lab coat, not unlike the ones I often wore in my laboratory. He looked young, at least in his early 20s. From the way he held his nose high in the air, he thought himself to be more important than the rest of the aristocrats. His hair was a light, sandy blonde with light waves that rested against his broad, pale forehead. From this distance away, I couldn't tell what color his eyes were, but their shape was large, almost freakishly too big for his face, while his nose was small and feminine. His lips were a darker color, almost as if they were covered in a thick layer of lipstick. Their bow was large and pointed to the point it almost brushed the underneath of his nose. His cheekbones were high and hollow-looking, to the point that they cast shadows over his face. The scientist wore a starched, pristine white lab coat, but underneath it he wore a black jacket, a button-down white shirt, and dark trousers. His neat, light brown loafers clicked against the courtyard's pavers, and every few seconds he hustled to keep up with the Duchess's long-legged gait. He seemed to struggle to keep up with her, even though he was only a few inches shorter than her and taller than the average man. Edeny spoke to the man behind her, but never shifted the umbrella from her shoulder or turned to look at him. It was clear that the two of them were engrossed in deep conversation. About what? I had no clue. But I was sure that this was the scientist that had replaced me, though I doubted that he would be successful in the endeavors she'd paid him for.
What is it, Charles? I thought we were going to the tailor's.
I barely turned my head in her direction. The brunette came to stand next to me, gazed out over my shoulder, and then spied the Duchess. Daisy froze for a second, her gaze narrowing on the tall, thin, blonde woman as she floated through the town square. And when I glanced down at her, the brunette's tiny hands curled into fists.
Oh, it's Edeny. But who's that with her?
I believe that's the scientist that replaced me, I stated. The one that created those augmentation stones. You remember those, don't you?
Of course I do. She used them on those men the day she came to take the manor away from us. They didn't work very well. That must be the man that Hortensia mentioned in her diary. What was his name? I think it was Lucio. No, that's not right.
Lucian, I grunted. That was his name.
Why does he look that way?
The brunette asked in a haughty tone. What do you mean? I snickered.
He looks so pompous. Like he's the most important person in the courtyard. Look at the way he holds himself. It's almost as if he thinks he's more important than the Duchess. And yet Edeny won't even look at him while she's speaking.
I wonder where she found him, I murmured. He must not be from around here. I've never seen him before.
He probably came from the capital. I mean, I've never been there, but he looks like someone who comes from a rich city like that.
Huh, I almost want to warn him. If he doesn't finish the tasks that the Duchess has given him, she'll kill him without a second thought. I wonder if he knows that, or if he's too vain to realize it.
If you did warn him, do you think he would believe you? I mean, honestly, would a man like that listen to you?
Well, probably not, I stated. But, oh, Daisy, I have to try. He probably has no idea what the Duchess will do to him if he doesn't perform for her. We all saw how terribly the augmentation stones went. If that's the best he can do, he'll be dead and in the ground within a month, I can guarantee it.
You could try to tell him. Where is the shop? I could go in by myself and pick out all of the dresses. I mean, Ryan and Valerie told me specifically what they wanted. Well, not only that, but are consorts allowed in tailors with their mistresses? That definitely seems like something that isn't allowed around here.
It depends on the mistress, honestly, I told her. Most women don't mind if their consorts come in with them, since consorts see them undressed anyway, but some women like to keep their modesty.
Then I'll go in and buy the dresses. Then you can warn him, and once you finish speaking with him, you can come into the tailor's, too, and see what I've picked out.
The brunette hastily snapped her lips closed, raised her chin, and gazed haughtily over her shoulder as the Duchess and the scientist stepped past. Edeny's violet eyes stayed straight forward. She floated past, but right as we were shoulder to shoulder, her gaze drifted over. A sly smile spread over the Duchess's lips. Her violet gaze slashed into me, and then she turned toward the man behind her.
Lucian, remind me again of the plans for the rest of the week. I want to know what you're doing every second of the day. Do you understand?
Yes, Duchess, the young man grinned. Tomorrow I plan to search for new patients that will better suit the experiments. I truly believe that it's the blood type that will make my machine work.
Our machine. I want you never to forget that. I pay you to do all of these things. But if you break our contract, the machine stays with me permanently. I won't have a repeat of what happened to me last time. You know, the man I told you about.
Yes, Lucian nodded. That horrible weasel of a man who stole your time, money, and the machine you two worked so hard on for many months. I would never do that to you, Duchess. I swear to you. I promise that I will try my hardest, and I will make the experiments work even if I have to continue until my fingers bleed. I will do it for you.
I appreciate the sentiments. But until you produce results, I make sure that you work night and day tirelessly. You promised me when I hired you that you were the best in the capital, and I want you to prove that to me. Do you understand? I will not give up this time. I will get what I want, and paid for. You're going to give it to me. You promised in your contract, and I expect you to deliver.
I will, Duchess. I will do anything to please you. I will give you everything that I've promised.
Good. Now stay out here. I'm going into the tailor's. I will be out in about an hour or so. I trust that you can occupy yourself for that amount of time.
Yes, mistress. Lucian grinned. I'll wait for you here, and won't move from this spot.
Edeny brushed past him, rolled her eyes, sighed loudly, and then ripped open the door to the tailor. Daisy's lips pursed out, her eyes widened, and then she glanced at me out of the corner of her eye.
I don't think she likes him very much. He sucks up to her too much, and you can tell she hates it. All of his words are just false promises. There's no way that he can create super soldiers for her. Not even you could do that, Charles.
That's why I said that she's going to kill him. There's no way he'll succeed, and when she's done with him, it'll all be over.
I guess this means I have to go into the tailor's shop with her. This should be interesting.
If I know Edeny well enough, I doubt she'll say anything to you, I assured. If anything, she'll just glare at you out of the corner of her eye or something like that. After the debacle with the manor, she can't face you.
All right, Charles. I'll be back in a little bit. I'll pick out everyone's dresses for them. Do you need a suit? I could pick one out for you.
No, I have one at home. I shook my head. Go on ahead. I'm sure Ryan and Valerie will love anything you pick out for them.
Daisy nodded once, smiled up at me, turned, and then stepped toward the tailor's. She glanced back at me once more, grabbed the handle to the door, and then swept inside. Once she was gone, I breathed a heavy sigh, glanced around at the other aristocrats, adjusted my shoulders, and then took a step toward the scientist. I didn't care about warning him about his fate. He should have known that when he agreed to the contract with the Duchess, he signed his own death warrant. I was here because I needed to know what they were doing, what types of experiments they were performing, and what it meant for the rest of the men in Edenheart. I could tell just from looking at Lucian that if I approached him, he wasn't going to just give up the information willingly, and I knew that I'd have to trick it out of him. Sucking up to him wouldn't work either. He may have looked like a pompous, self-centered man, but if the Duchess hired him, he had to have some sort of intelligence to him. I had to be aggressive with this man. There was no other way to do it, and if he refused to speak with me, I'd have to find another way to get the information out of him. There wasn't any guarantee that he was going to tell me anything, or that I'd succeed, but I had to try.